Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. I hope you're doing well. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode is with Jamie Lawson and you're in for a real treat. This was a wonderful conversation and we speak about all of the stuff we usually speak about on this podcast and so much more. And it's not often you get to ask someone what it's like to walk out on stage at Wembley Stadium and sing some songs. And it's something that I sort of saved till the end. It was like, I want to sort of do all the usual chat, but I'm just fascinated as to how someone would approach something like that. And we do discuss that towards the end. And there's lots of shared love for some incredible artists on this podcast as well. And before we get on with it, just a big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. Thank you very much to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Asha for putting this podcast together. And obviously thanks to Jamie for giving up his time. Also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, please go and have a look about in the archives, because there's 150 or so episodes featuring some of your favourite musicians, podcasters, producers, DJs, actors, comedians. Go and have a rummage around in the vaults and see what you can find. And if that's not enough, then I also have a Patreon page. And each week I put up a standalone episode over there. And you can find out about that at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Let's get on with things. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Jamie Lawson. Sorry to chip in, but I've got another announcement. We have another sponsor. Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast. If you're in a band or an upcoming singer-songwriter, or you just want a little look behind the scenes of how the music business works, this podcast is for you. They interview big name guests every week, and the lads go in on topics such as how festivals are put together, the role of today's record companies, the importance of touring, marketing, songwriting, the list goes on. And wait till you hear who they've had on. The Killers, Jimmy Eat World, Editors, Frank Turner, Shed 7, as well as loads of record company execs, festival organisers and radio DJs, and loads more. Visit acpgmusic.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. It's the Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast. Go and check it out.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay.
Has everyone else been absolutely useless, or is it just me?
No.
It's technological challenges.
Well, that voice you hear there, that's today's guest. That's Jamie Lawson. Hello.
Hello. How are you? Apologies right. Already. Apologies straight away.
It's wonderful. It's something that we've all been sort of trying to sort of get our heads around, and I guess not just musicians having to sort of do stuff remotely now, but podcasters as well, which is something that there's so many of these recordings. I mean, we're doing this in lockdown, I should say, face to face over Zoom, but thankfully, you know, so many people that I do chat to have the facilities to record stuff at home, which is great, because it means that for people that don't know how the podcast things are working remotely, a lot of time if people I record my end and Jamie's recording his, and then my producer will paste them together, and then you get a nice sounding podcast. You don't get that kind of sort of phone-in style. It sounds nice and warm and
hopefully, and unless I completely mess it up, which we've already discovered is quite possible. So yes.
Well, Before we get on to your track list, Jamie, I just want to ask you how you found quarantine and lockdown as both a human and as a creative.
Well, as a human, I found it the whole situation very worrying, kind of life altering. Life changing. Is normal over? Are we done with normal? Is this a new normal now? And people saying we're going to get back to normal soon. That's a load of rubbish. That's not going to happen anymore. Specifically, I guess, in my case about shows and things like that, doing gigs, how comfortable are people going to be squashed into a club full of, you know, 200-300 other people, shoulder to shoulder? I don't think I'd want to go and do that right now.
Yeah.
You know, can't see me wanting to do that this year. How comfortable will I be next year? Are we all going to be fine once there's a vaccine and we know that actually we just have to take some vaccine and everything will be all right? Or sure. I just don't know. I can't work it out. And
I think that's the thing, Jamie. I think it's the thing that no one really knows. And I think that's where the kind of the weirdness comes from, that feeling of like, well, no one's got any answers to this yet. And,
exactly,
and I think that's what leaves you in limbo. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, completely, completely. And unfortunately, we have a government that are just chasing themselves around. You know, they haven't got a clue themselves. They're different statements from one politician to the next. And then obviously we've just... this is like, what are we on, 3 or 4 days after the Dominic Cummings thing?
Yeah.
And that's been absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, how he has not gone is beyond me. So, you know, this idea of using your common sense and following a government that has none is just bonkers. It's bonkers. I don't know if you watched the Charlie Brooker viral wipe thing, but
what
absolute
a breath
genius.
Of fresh air. Like, that was
so
the best.
So clever.
That's one of my highlights of these last couple of months in lockdown. Is just as soon as I knew that Brooker was going to be doing something, I thought, oh, this is going to be good. And it delivered. It really did.
Absolutely. Just, you know, factual state after factual statement. And they're all just geniusly funny, as well as just being, oh my God, that actually happened.
You know,
it's just, it's so well done. But yeah, so you're almost living in Black Mirror society type stuff.
Exactly,
it's just,
how it feels.
It's all over the place. So as a musician and, you know, in terms of creating, I would have thought it was a brilliant time to create. I haven't really done any creating.
That's the answer. I've spoke to so many people, musicians and stuff, since this began. And so many of them have said that.
It seems that people have either gone one way or another. It's either they've all taken up a new hobby, learnt a language, done a load of DIY, fixed the garden or something, or not done anything. I have a slight excuse. I'm quite lucky in one way that I was going to take all this time off right now anyway. Mm. I had we had a baby in February. So I have we have a 16-week-old baby right now, which obviously adds its own complications in a lockdown environment. We've just had this morning had a health visitor this Zoom meeting with a health visitor, you know, it's just like, which is also kind of weird because obviously she can't see the baby. So if there is, you know, you have that worry that if there's anything just slightly off that she would notice that you'd have no idea about, she's not going to see it over Skype. So you have these, you know, all those sort of issues and worries. But so that he's kind of my reason for having not done any work.
to be able to go, right, I'm going to go and write a new album when you've got a 16-week-old, then, it's not going to happen.
No, not at all. having said that, this very day, it's the 29th of May today as we record this, and my new EP has come out today. It's been released today.
Oh, wow. Okay,
so,
fantastic.
I recorded that last year knowing that obviously Billy was coming along and we could plan this kind of year around it. Obviously, we didn't know the pandemic was on its way, and whether to release music at this time is another matter as well. And I really did debate that. But I think it's a good time for new music. I think people, not to blow my own trumpet, but certain, you know, people that like my music would look forward to that, and it will give some people some enjoyment, and me as well, to release music into the world. So I think it's worth doing, and I'm glad I've done it. So yeah, it's been an interesting time, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. and I think, you know, you say about putting music out, you know, for your fans and stuff like that, then it is a good time to put stuff out, and I think it's a good time for creatives to put stuff out, and for people to enjoy it, for, you know, if anything, just escapism and that distraction from, put your phones down and stop looking at news feeds, because it's going to drive you spare, you know.
Well,
it's not going to give you any answers there.
It's easy to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it
absolutely,
is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Completely. Yeah, turn it off, put your headphones on and listen to some music and escape. Track one, Jamie.
Yeah.
Well, a song with the great, your song that you regard as having the greatest intro ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a question. What a ridiculous question. can I ask, has anyone, I assume a lot of people would go for like a Rolling Stone, Bob Dylan. Has anyone done that?
We've had no Dylan.
No.
I think somebody chose Jack Flash, I think.
As in Jumpin' Jack Flash?
Yeah.
Right, okay. No one's chosen like a Rolling Stone. I'm so surprised.
Yeah, it's a corking start, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. One of the... It's just, I would have thought that was the best, and then it's everything else after that.
It's just that one note. It's like, you hear that one note at the beginning.
The big bang of the snare drum, you know? It's just electrifying.
And the minute you hear that, it's like when you hear that chord before, is it Hard Day's Night, isn't it?
Yes, it is,
And like, you just think, it's Hard Day's Night.
Yeah.
Like, just exactly. That one chord, it's that iconic. And and it's definitely the same with like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah. I mean, it has that, there's just that moment of suspense before the song starts, essentially, of just that one hit. But I just assumed someone else would have gone for it. But anyway, I went for a Michael Jackson song called We're Almost There, which I first heard on a best of Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5 vinyl album that my brothers had.
Yeah.
And it's a stunning song. Do you know the song?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what a tune.
Yeah.
Just the that intro itself, the way that it builds and builds and builds, you know, it's almost like the Rocky theme.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing. And then it just goes into that release.
Yeah.
It just opens up. With all those strings and that bass line that the Jam nicked for Town Like Malice, Town Called Malice, you know, it's just brilliant, you know.
It's the way you've just described that. If I was to do this, answer my own questions, and if I chose a song that made me instantly from the intro have to dance, it's Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Right.
And that's same. The full version's got that kind of bass line. Yeah. And then you've just got the woo and the strings. And then man. It's just genius.
Absolutely.
That's an intro. But so how are you with the madness that is, I mean, we have to appreciate, everything else aside, Michael Jackson musically is a fucking genius.
Yeah.
Right. Undeniable.
Yeah.
Can you separate the music, the artist from the madness that is the media, the whole Michael Jackson stuff? I mean, we should also point out that nothing has ever been proved that he's
let's
done.
Let's face it, he lost a lot of money in not proving.
Exactly that, and it's strange, you know. I'm a huge Smiths fan, and Morrissey's recently been saying some strange things that don't compute with me. And it's like, can you separate the man from?
It seems lately that my favorite artists have all been massively letting me down. Morrissey for one, Michael Jackson, obviously. Ryan Adams as well had some kind of controversy recently.
That's right.
That I don't know. I did not get to the bottom of, but it was all a bit like, what's going on here? And it's like, oh God, can we please just stop?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there must be a lot of people with. I mean, I've got a lot of sort of Morrissey lyrics tattooed all over me, and I'm thinking, thankfully they're Smith's ones and they're not his solo work. And I'm thinking,
well, yeah,
please
thank
stop,
God for Johnny
please
Marr,
stop.
Right?
Oh, Johnny Marr, thank you, mate.
Yeah, oh, right, exactly. But
so
yeah,
can you do that?
Well, I have to admit, I struggle. The very young Michael Jackson songs that this is, We're Almost There, is off an album. I found it on that Best Of, but it's off an album called Forever Michael. And there was,
yeah,
he, that was released when he was 16, the year I was born. And there is three of his records around there. I think another one was Music in Me, and I think Farewell My Summer Love. These albums I kind of discovered when I was about 14.
Yeah.
And honestly, they got me through a whole summer.
Yeah.
Whatever was going on in my life at that time,
Farewell
I turned
My
to
Summer
those...
Love's the forgotten gem.
Oh, man. But
like, what a single.
What an album as well. If you like, there's some tunes on it. But all those three records flopped massively. Mm. Like, I was actually looking some stuff up. I think this got to number 54 in the chart. You know, it was a
That's
massive
crazy
flop for Michael
to
Jackson.
Think Michael Jackson got to only number 54.
Exactly. So these records did disastrously, you know, for him. And this is obviously before Off the Wall. But yeah, I just turned to them again and again. And kind of still do.
Yeah.
You know, there's part of me that really does still need these songs. And recently I discovered someone, Nick Cave does this kind of question and answer thing on his website.
Yeah.
And someone asked him about Morrissey, I think.
Yeah.
And about...
They did.
Yeah. And he talks about how you need to disengage the artist from the art. And that's really interesting. And I don't know if it's always possible.
Yeah.
The way I see it is, you know, at 16 years old, Michael Jackson's not thinking much. You know, if we talk about specifically paedophilia stuff that he's been accused of, you know, at 16, he's not thinking that. So can I listen to that? Can I listen to anything before Thriller?
Yeah.
Because it seems like everything after Thriller is where all the accusations start.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's really odd thinking, and I'm not sure that's viable, you know? But that's kind of like my head, can I justify it that way? No,
it was
the answer,
so weird.
But, you know...
When Nick Cave kind of sort of was like, you know, you need to separate it, and I was thinking, brilliant. And then I see that one of my other heroes, Billy Bragg, then made a statement, and I thought, oh, come on, please back it, Billy. And he was like... No, the guy's a piece of shit. And I was like, oh. That's it. I've got to bin the Morrissey records. Billy said so.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, Billy's a huge, huge inspiration for me. But and he's recently said some stuff about gender identity and sexual identity and trans stuff, which is also really weird. And the lines and the fine lines there of, you know, of women's rights and then transsexual rights, etc., and where lines are crossed.
Oh,
and how
really?
Safe spaces for women can be encroached upon by basically men predators saying now self-identifying, and how do women keep safe, etc., etc. And it's a really deep well that you can fall into as a rabbit hole. You can be down there for years. So there's all sorts of stuff. There's man,
this is the damn
it's never ending.
Social media.
It
all
kind
of a sudden.
Is.
All your pop stars have got voices that you don't want to hear.
Well, Billy, you can trust Billy, surely. Surely
oh,
you can trust Billy.
Oh, please tell me you've got to. Okay. Well, I want to ask you quickly. I always ask this question, and I've been doing this for nearly a couple of years now. I never quite get the question quite as I want it to sound. But as a songwriter and as somebody that writes music that, you know, has had huge mainstream appeal as well, how do you approach an intro in your songwriting, maybe when you first started as a songwriter, right up to the current EP that's just dropped? Is intro something key? Because from when you first started making music to now, the way that people listen to music is very, very different. You know,
yes.
There's lots of streaming and things like that.
Yeah.
This is a super loaded question, but basically I wonder how much emphasis you put on the intro and And has that changed over the years, you know, through consideration of like radio and things like that?
Well, this is interesting. I was just listening to your podcast with Lamal.
And oh, okay.
He talks about the intro to Too Shy being 40 seconds long.
Yeah. Right?
If you're not at the chorus by 40 seconds now,
people
are turned off.
Yeah.
That's the chorus. You've had to get through the intro and the first verse before you get to the chorus. And he's only just starting the song. You know, it doesn't really happen anymore.
People hadn't stopped talking about his hair at that point anyway.
Maybe that's the key. So there's two things. I realized as a solo act, playing intros with an acoustic guitar that is essentially just strumming chords around and around, whereas the recorded version might have something else over it to make it interesting. As a solo act, that wasn't interesting. So I kind of started getting to the song as soon as I could, to the point where now I'm pretty much just straight in.
Yeah.
First line, that's what you'll hear. There's no intro whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think on the EP that has just come out, I think 3 of the 5 songs start that way.
Yeah.
One has an intro that you would call an intro with a string section, and the other one is like 2 chords, and then I'm in. So for that reason, intros for me came about via playing live. That people, and the same for guitar solos. Because I was only playing an acoustic guitar, I couldn't do a solo at the same time.
Yeah.
Just get rid of it. It's not interesting
to
play that chord structure again and again and again whilst you listen to it in your head and others just watch you. So I've never had many, you know, instrumental breaks in my songs either.
Yeah.
Oddly, the only song I can think of that really did have an intro was the big one, was Wasn't Expecting That, which does do exactly what I've just said about going around the chord structure once, you know, and somehow it got away with it. I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I did that. But that's what I did for that. But I don't. Yeah, I generally try not to. I just want to get there.
Okay. Track 2. The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you?
I think there must be songs before this. So I've gone for another Michael Jackson song off the same album. So this album, the kind of best of, was I think my brother got when I was 8. I turned 8 and he got it for Christmas. I'm a December child, so it was pretty close. Yeah. And I listen to it all the time, which is, you know, I found quite a few records via my brothers. They're like 7 and 8 years older than I am. So, but I was trying to think, like, I was even a fan of, like, you know, Shakin' Stevens and things like that when I was 5 or 6 or 4 and 5. I don't know. But and
we all was. You know, I mean, he looked cool, didn't he? He was a bit of double denim, white socks. He looked like, you know, he was our Elvis.
But he had songs like Give Me Your Heart Tonight. And I remember thinking the melody of that was beautiful. And that something about that melody did something inside.
Yeah.
But this, the One Day in Your Life, the Michael Jackson song, there was something about that. It's the saddest harmonica intro you'll ever hear, ever. It's so sad. It yearns immediately. And then it was just this kind of... There's a lyric in it that goes, one day in your life, you'll remember the love you found here. You'll remember me somehow. Though you don't need me now, I will stay in your heart. And when things fall apart, you'll remember one day.
Yeah.
When. That was what got me. Not if. Yeah. If things fall apart.
Yeah.
It's a whole different song.
Yeah.
And it's just like, when things fall apart, I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's one of the things about those songs, Motown songs, I guess, they did have that. They had that I'm going to be here for you element. A lot of them did. But things are going to be rough.
Yeah.
You know, and following that, my home life was odd. My dad was sick a lot. Things got rough. You know, as a kid, you just kind of deal with it. Yeah. You're a kid and you get through it, you know. You don't think about it much. But looking back on it, I think, oh, I get it. I get why that song hit me over other songs, you know.
What was that emotion?
Oh, that's a good question. Understanding.
Okay.
Someone out there, something, had been through this before.
Yeah.
Empathy, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the things that never fails to kind of knock me sideways when I have these conversations with people is people will throw up a song like One Day in Your Life, which I haven't thought about until I got the email with your song choices on. And I think to myself, that could have definitely have been mine. And,
right.
And so many people sort of send these songs over, and I think, oh, God, yeah, I never thought of that. Yeah, I wonder when I first heard that. Yeah, I probably heard that. And I do think, like, I remember hearing that song and literally just, it's drenched in sadness, isn't it?
It's all over it. It's pure melancholy.
Yeah.
But here's the other weird thing. That was the opening track on a best of album.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you hear. That harmonica, the saddest sound you'll ever hear, is the opening track on a best of the Jackson 5. Not starting with I Want You Back, ABC, The Love You Save. They're starting with that. Why?
I mean, it hardly sets the pace for the album, does it?
It's so strange. So strange. I do not know why that is. There must be a reason, but I don't know it.
Yeah.
So that was the first. Yeah, that was the first kind of song of theirs I heard.
So where was you then, Jamie? Where was home?
That was in Plymouth. Yeah, okay. St. Budo.
Okay. And so aside from sort of raiding your brother's records and stuff, did your folks have music on at home? Were you exposed to sort of lots of music growing up?
No, not at all, no. Radio 2 was on, which at the time was awful. Mm-hmm. My dad had a terrible record collection. Like really bad. Jimmy Reeves, Nana Mouskouri, Perry Como, not so bad. He did have the one record, and the one record that was in there that I still love to this day was John Denver's Rocky Mountain High.
Yeah.
For some reason, so I have a song. I released an album last year called The Years in Between, and I name check that album in the song.
Yeah.
I kind of made this connection of I used to listen to that record a lot when I was very young, and you know, I started wondering, well, is that what made me want to go and play guitar?
Yeah,
because I don't know why I asked for a guitar. No idea at all. So was it something about that? Did my dad somehow surreptitiously set me on this road to what I was going to do? And so I kind of wrote about that in the song The Years in Between. So just so you know, my dad died when I was 19, so I have this whole life of all these things that I've now accomplished, managed to do, and all these dreams that I did have then that came true that he didn't get to see. Yeah. And we've reached the point in my life where I'm now longer without him than I was with him.
Okay.
And that's a strange line to cross, you know. So I think all those things were on my mind when I was writing that stuff. And that John Denver record's brilliant.
Yeah.
If honestly, if you don't know it, it's so good. The layering of it, the acoustic playing on it is fantastic. And it's almost like the stuff. Do you remember that a few years back, that Midlake album, The Trials of Van? It's like that. Yeah. It could be right alongside that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant, brilliant record.
Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. It's really weird that you say that as well, because there was a few albums growing up and there was some awful stuff. There was lots of Brotherhood of Man and just shit, like... But there was the Best of John Denver.
Right.
And I just remember, like, constantly listening to Leaving on a Jet Plane.
Right,
And just absolutely loving his voice. And then seeing him on The Muppet Show.
Right.
He was on The Muppet Show. What was you want at that age?
Yeah. I mean, he got a lot of stick for not being cool. Bless him, John Denver. But, you know, I don't know. He nailed it on some of those tunes.
Completely. Okay, track three, Jamie. The song reminds you of your school days.
So I have two, kind of, and one is primary school and one is secondary school, and
cool.
Both are the same memory of me kind of walking around a playground singing them. So I was a big House Martins fan because of Happy Hour and the video to Happy Hour.
Obviously.
And, you know, just singing that, and I got into that. My brothers, again... he had London Neil Hull for, and I played that record a lot, and I loved that. And then I was the one who then kind of wanted to go out and get the new album when it came out. So Build was off The People Who Grinned Themselves to Death, which
what
is, you know...
What amazing title for an album.
And what a record for like an 11 or a 12-year-old to be going to get. Excuse me, do you have a... You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. So, but that, for whatever, you know, the song Build, which is, I used to sing a lot just to myself. Build. Just all the time. It was just always in my head. And I loved Paul Heaton's voice, and I still do.
I think Paul Heaton has got one of the greatest voices that the UK has ever produced.
Yeah. And I'm one of the best songwriters.
Incredible.
And not really been, you know, credited as such, I don't think. I feel like he's, I can't say he's underrated, but he doesn't seem to have had any of the accolades that he should have had.
No.
For someone, A, who's written such brilliant songs and shifted the units he's done. Because he's sold a lot of records.
One in five households had Carry On up the charts.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, that's insane, isn't
yeah.
it? And it is. He's not given the credibility. I don't think that he deserves. I mean, those that love Paul Heaton fucking love Paul Heaton.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think, you know, it's easy to think, okay, yeah, you know, Happy Hour was incredible. The Housemates had some amazing music, and then The Beautiful South had incredible music as well. And there's lyrics that. Are you familiar with the track Let Love Speak Up Itself?
Absolutely. One of my favourites.
Fucking hell.
That record, like, that Choke album's amazing.
Oh my God. His vocals on that
are
unbelievable. There was a brilliant documentary about Paul Heaton that was on just before Christmas. I don't know if you ever saw it.
I did.
Oh, was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's everything you want in a pop star. He's a bit crazy, isn't he? You know, he's very, very strange with a lot of his sort of little kind of habits. I remember reading something years ago about him where he had this kind of routine when he got on an aeroplane. He was petrified of flying, and he had like a 1980s football sticker that he used to have on his thigh that he would rub like as they took off. He had like all these really, and then plus he used to collect crisp bags and oh, that's what you want in your pop stars, isn't it?
Oh man, yeah, crazy. I ridiculously followed him at Glastonbury. I got to play Glastonbury a couple of years back, and he was on before me. And I stood side of stage watching him, thinking, wow. I've followed him my whole life.
Yeah.
And I'm about to go on exactly where he stood. And I remember him kind of, he was backstage and stuff, and I couldn't go and say hello. I said hello to Jackie.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say hello to him because I'm so worried that heroes like that wouldn't like what I do. Because I do this other kind of almost mainstream soppy love song thing. I don't think it is that personally, but it could be seen as that. Wasn't expecting that could be seen as that. It isn't, but... So I have this absolute fear that they would be, oh yeah, I know you. And that would be it. I would just be crushed. So I couldn't say hello. But yeah, I'm a huge fan. He's still writing amazing records.
Absolutely.
Still singing incredibly.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful that he's kind of been there all those years to have that music to listen to.
There was no 10-year-old boys at my school wandering around the playground singing the Alice Martins.
Well, here's the other one. I think I must have
got about 14 before that happened.
I said, at primary school, I went around the playground singing Please, Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want by the Smiths. Because my brother had the Peel Sessions record. What's that called? Hatful of Hollow.
Hatful of Hollow, yeah.
Yeah, so he had that record. I listened to that all the time. And I would be going around, like, as you say, like 8 or 9, going, good times for a change. See the luck I've had. You know, it's like 8 years old singing that stuff.
All the other kids like, what's wrong with Jamie?
Exactly. Nothing really changed.
Oh, fantastic. what a privilege, though, to have like older brothers sort of exposing you to music like that at such a young age. That's incredible.
Yeah, my brother Andy kind of takes credit. He takes his own credit for... He says he sat me down when I was 5 in front of Summer Holiday, Cliff Richard film, told me to watch it. And he says that's what started it all off. But I don't know if that's true or not. But they did have some good records.
And what was that your two tunes?
Yeah, sorry, that was the school ones,
So did you enjoy school?
It's a tough question because I probably, for part of it I did. I reached about 13, possibly 14, something changed. I'd had to grow up pretty quick. Because of my dad, I suddenly felt like school wasn't the right place for me. Obviously, I had to keep going. I removed myself from all my friend group and started to sit at the front of the class rather than at the back of the class. And I kind of just got on with it. I struggled, probably. I was quite popular. I was quite liked. And then in the fifth year, I kind of joined the school band. And that became my salvation in a way. That's what set me off doing what I still do. You know, we used to practice every lunchtime after school as well. We were so ridiculously dedicated for 15, 16-year-olds learning R.E.M. songs, Pearl Jam songs, Nirvana songs, Jimi Hendrix, Chili Peppers, anything that was around. Yeah. And that's just all we did. We kind of devoured it. And that was my safety. That was my safety net. That's what caught me.
At that point, did you realize that music was something that you wanted to pursue?
Not in any way. No, I didn't. I was from Plymouth. There was no way you made a career in music. coming from Plymouth, you know. I think for a while I was I wanted to be an art teacher. And then, because I really liked my art teacher, but then he changed and he got sad and I didn't get that and he was quite angry. So I didn't want to be an art teacher anymore. And then I went to art college, even though I failed my art A levels, somehow I still got into art college. And it was, I think, a year and a half into art college when I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I left and moved to London to be a singer.
Wonderful.
That's an abridged version. There's more to that story, but yeah.
All right. Well, look, let's go back as well and back to where to them times. I want to know what the first record you remember buying was from a record store.
Well, do you know what? I can't remember.
Okay.
So I can. I think the first album I ever bought.
Yeah.
Was either
yeah.
Peter Cetera, Glory of Love, because the Karate Kid was out.
Obviously.
And or Michael Jackson's Bad album. Now, I think Peter Cetera precedes it, but I'm not certain. So, also...
Cetera would have been about 80... Oh, I reckon that was maybe about 86, 87.
Yeah, and so was, Bad was 87, 88, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. However, I did have singles before that, and I can clearly remember Shake and Stevens, like I said, Musical Youth were in there.
Yep.
And the track I'd mentioned to you, which was Candy Girl by New Edition,
yep.
which is an awful song. So, no, I know you make playlists of this stuff, so I so apologize to your... fan base and your loyal fan base that might go and listen to this playlist, because I listened to it yesterday thinking I should probably go and listen to that again, and I thought, oh my god.
Well, the first album I ever bought was Now That's Rock and Music, the first one, and that's on there, and so I listened to that a lot, and obviously that band, a lot of very famous people come out of that band.
Bobby Brown,
yeah,
Bell Biv DeVoe.
Exactly.
That girl is poison.
It's like,
what a tune.
Oh, that's a tune, that is.
I was even a Bobby Brown fan for a while.
Oh,
you know?
Mate. Every little step.
Exactly, what? Man. Exactly. Classics.
And what's weird is, if you go, not that I'd expect you to, but if you go on YouTube, you can, New Edition are still playing. They've all got back together.
Are they really?
And it's very strange seeing, 50-year-old men singing Candy Girl. It's quite strange.
Do you know, I listened to the song on Spotify yesterday, and they had over a million monthly listeners, and I thought, who is still listening to this?
It's got to be for that tune.
I don't know. I just thought that was odd in itself.
They had a follow-up called Mr. Telephone Man?
Yes, I think it was.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, the thing is, what you've just said there, you've just said New Edition and Musical Youth. Now, both of them, as I'm 47, and so when that came out, I was 10, 11, and I remember thinking, I watched something about Musical Youth, and it said they didn't have to go to school. And I was like, wow, this is what I want to do. Well, New Edition don't go to school. And then I saw something about a couple of the cast of Grange Hill that they only done a few lessons whilst filming.
Yeah, right.
I just thought, I need to be famous. You don't have to go to school. I want to be in Musical Youth.
Oh, man.
I'll hang around with Zamo.
That'll lead you down the wrong road with Zamo. You don't want to go with Zamo.
Absolutely. All right, so... moving on from school and I guess around the time of art college and beyond, I'm going to ask you about a song that soundtrack you're using, Clubland. Now, before you answer it, I should stress as well, because I speak to so many musicians and I need to maybe rephrase this question somewhat, because I think people presume I'm going, did you have a summer in Ibiza, or was you in one of them kind of high street chrome-covered clubs dancing to Dr. Alban? No, none of that. If you was going down your local dirty, sweaty indie club and throwing yourself
it's
around to Pearl Jam, that's cool.
Yeah, I didn't think that. Isn't it strange? Because you're right, I did. I was thinking, well, I never went clubbing.
Yeah.
Ever. And But the reason I never went clubbing, again, was because of my brothers.
Yeah.
So they used to go out clubbing. Yeah. And when I was, you know, 11, 12, they'd bring all their friends back to our house and you'd see them in the morning with black eyes and shit like that. And they were just getting in fights all the time. Now, Plymouth at that time was pretty rough.
Yeah, of course.
There's a street called Union Street, which is famous for it. And so I thought, well, I'm never doing that. Yeah. And I didn't.
Yeah.
Now, at art college, on a Wednesday, there was a jade.
Where was that?
Plymouth still. I stayed that in Plymouth. Plymouth. So yeah. There was what was it called? A jelly jazz night, which was like acid jazz.
Yeah.
And I went to that. So I remember going to that, but I couldn't remember one song.
Yeah.
You know, it was all like...
Was that JTQ and Cool Droy and...
That's it. Yes, exactly that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably Mother some Earth. Stevie Wonder stuff, you know, thrown in every now and again. But
yeah.
So, but I wouldn't... you know, I haven't listened to those stuff, that stuff since then.
Yeah.
So I couldn't name a song. But I would have gone to indie clubs when I was in London. I used to go to The Garage.
Yeah.
You know, there was a club there.
Yeah.
And when I lived in Dublin for a while, and I used to go to Whelan's, and there was always, on a Saturday night after the band, there was always a club there too.
Yeah.
But again, I don't really remember a song. It might have been, at that time, it would have been The Killers, like Mr. Brightside, if that came on. And again, another amazing intro, because you're like, tune straight away, you know?
It's so strange, right? Because... I've been a club promoter for 30 years now, and I run this indie club in Essex and have done for, you know, 30 years. And Mr. Brightside still is the most requested song we ever get. And it's one of them songs that you do think, about 3 or 4 years ago, I thought, oh, for fuck's sake, come on. Like, no more Mr. Brightside. And it felt tired. And then I saw them a couple of years ago in a, like, performing it at a thing in Reading, like, and or some Radio 1 thing. And then I saw them this year doing it at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
It was good, wasn't it?
With Johnny Marr playing guitar as well.
Yeah.
And it sounded so vital, fresh, and exciting. And it is weird because it's played to death, and but there is one reason for that. It's because it's fucking really brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those classics as well, where the first verse is the same as the second verse.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not even, it doesn't even, it feels like they've gone, oh, we'll go back to that. And they never got time, and they didn't need to. It's like, how did they get away with it? But yeah, it's a killer tune.
But, no pun intended there.
Yes, sorry, yeah.
Are you a dancer?
I can be, yes. I am, or I've been known to, probably less and less as I get older. But there are a few songs that, you know, are guaranteed to get me on the dance floor, and one of them would be Higher and Higher by Jackie Wilson, which I must confess was also our first wedding song.
Oh, that's wonderful. Our first
dance. Yeah. So we even did the whole dance routine thing and getting everyone up on the dance floor to do the dance routine. And I remember my niece thinking it was just the lamest thing ever because she could dance because she was, you know, doing GCSE dance or whatever it was. And it's just like, oh, this is so easy. It's like, oh. It was really boring. But it was just the best day. And that was, you know, one of the highlights for sure.
He's Jackie Wilson's voice. I know I've just gone on about Paul Heaton's voice, but Jackie Wilson's voice. Have you ever heard him sing Danny Boy?
No.
Jamie, when we're done, go and listen to it.
Look it. Okay.
And it will knock you sideways. It's unreal.
Wow.
His voice goes up and you think, oh my God, how's he got there? Oh no, he's done it again. He's gone even, oh, hang on a minute, he's gone again. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And it's got that, I can only equate it to like what you sometimes hear Mariah Carey doing, but it's not that kind of, that showing off of, look what I can do thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just coming from within and it's stunning.
Thanks. I will check it out. I mean, you mentioned Paul Heaton again, but that's where he was inspired from. That's where he got that. He was a huge fan, or is a huge fan of that stuff.
Yeah.
So he knew that stuff inside out. I remember him singing a Bill Withers track on Later called You Just Can't Smile It Away, which is just gorgeous.
I remember him singing, and I can't find it anywhere, and it was on a show like, was it called Rapido or something like that with Jane Middlemiss or something And he was singing with a choir, Lean On Me.
Right.
And it was just incredible. And I know that he got into some trouble with Jazzy B, because in, I can't think what Beautiful South song it is, he says, back to bed, back to reality.
Yeah, back to bed, back to reality. You are, and you are.
That's it.
Yeah.
And he was saying that Jazzy B and Soul to Soul tried to sue him for Back to Life, and sort of said something like, you know, it wasn't sort of, you know, they're about soul music, and he was like, and I remember him saying, I've got more soul in my little finger than Jazzy B's got in his old body. And I just thought, Jazzy B needs to listen to him singing Lean On Me. That's like, that's soul music right there. Like, absolutely. Yeah. Track 6. Favourite song from an artist from your home county?
Well, so I'm from Devon, right? Okay. So this is really, I mean, it's not difficult. I'm quite lucky in that. I've chosen a song called White Hair by Seth Lakeman, who is a friend, and I know Seth. But there is very little choice.
So what else is there?
So I actually looked up. I had to look up, you know, famous people, singers from Devon, right? So Chris Martin's from Devon. He's from Barnstable. So your man from Muse.
Of course he is, yeah.
They're from Tynmouth. Joss Stone.
Yeah.
Ben Howard. This list, right, was scraping the barrel so much that it had to include Will Young because he went to the University of Exeter.
Not having that on default, no way.
And Tom York also, and then Damon Albarn because he owns a farm in Devon.
I'm not having that. Damon Albarn, we've had him because he went to uni in Essex. We're having him. Exactly. He's Colchester.
Tom York's from Oxford. I don't know where Will Young's from, but I just thought, oh, man, they obviously, you know, they struggled to find 50 people on a list of famous Devonians.
Wonderful.
Yeah, crazy. But anyway, Seth Lakeman is a folk singer from Yelverton, so not far from Plymouth. He was once in a band called Equation, which were kind of going to be this folk pop crossover that Jeff Travis signed to his label. So Jeff Travis did Rough Trade,
yeah.
And then set up a label called Blanco y Negro, I think. And Equation were going to be this big pop folk crossover, and it never really happened. It produced Seth, Cara Dillon, Kate Rusby, and Catherine and Sean, as folk artists themselves. So they all went on to do things and beautiful things as well. I'm a big Kate Rusby fan. I'm a big Cara Dillon fan. And then Seth. And Seth has this kind of really soulful way of approaching folk. He sings it from the heart because that's pretty much all he knows, and he plays it from the heart because that's all he knows. It's all he's ever done from the age of 3 or something ridiculous. You know, his playing is incredible. The song White Hair was actually a Radio 2 single of the week or something like that, and he was also, you know, I think he signed to Katie Tunstall's label, Relentless, is that right? Something like that. And so I think there was hope that that would be a crossover as well. And for a little time it did. And the song White Hair was kind of that crossover, really. And it's a song about a folk myth. And I looked it up. It's to do with how, I'll read you this quote. It says, in some parts of Britain, it used to be said by the cunning folk that when a pure maiden who had loved a man with all her heart and soul is forsaken or is betrayed by him, her spirit returns in the form of a white hair to haunt that man, bringing him misery and death. And that was the, you know, song of the week on Radio 2 was
joyous.
About that. It's just, I thought it was brilliant. So, yeah, I mean, that's all folk music in one paragraph right there. That's all about that. But, yeah, so, I mean, I was really chuffed and proud of him, for him, that he was kind of reaching these places, yeah. You know, with his music, considering he would never have expected it. So, yeah. And it's a beautiful song. Yeah. It's a gorgeous song.
Before we get to the last track, I was chatting to my wife and children today, and they said, "Are you podcasting?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I've got Jamie on today," and they saw you supporting Ed, and I've just got to ask, like, what does that feel like before, during, and after walking out on a stage of that size to that many people?
So I was very lucky. I got to open for Ed on a whole series of stadium dates. And I realized quite quickly that it was a whole other level of gig. So I couldn't really, my thing, when, if you came to see me at my show, I am relatively quiet. I'm quite talkative. I want you to come to me and I want you to feel safe, and I will invite you in. You know, we're there together. It's a beautiful experience. And, you know, even if you're there on your own, you are amongst friends. That's how I see my shows. For when you walk out at Wembley and there's 80,000 people, that doesn't work. So I realized I had to start warming up for the show. I had a 20-minute slot for Ed. I would try and get 8 songs into that 20 minutes or 7. It might have been 7. And I would start warming up for that show an hour and a half beforehand. Now, usually for my own show, I would maybe do 2 or 3 songs, because I would just, it would just be this. For my own, I have a kind of ritual. I sing Jackson Browne's These Days and Mr. Bojangles. For some reason, those two songs put me in a mood that I'm now okay. You know, I know where I'm at. This is where I want to be. This is the mood I'm at. This is good. That wouldn't work for, you know, Stade de France or Berlin Olympia. So, so I'd have to play for like an hour and a half to do a 20-minute set. And the reason is just the electricity that comes back at you is just so immense.
Yeah.
That it just, you just had to kind of get to a place, you know, so high before you even get on the stage. Otherwise, it just blows you away. And I just remember really enjoying it every minute. Yeah. You know, I really did enjoy it. Because it was kind of like, in some ways, it was harking back to the pop star that I wanted to be at 8 years old.
It's Michael Jackson.
Exactly. It wanted to, I moved away from that as I got older. And I found REM and Crowded House, and it was a different type of music. Even though they played big venues, there was a difference to it. So, but I kind of channeled this inner pop star that was still there somehow to kind of go and do this thing of being this larger than life Jamie, if you like, in order to do it. Still presenting my songs as they were. Yeah. I didn't change anything there. I just picked the ones that would work the best in that situation and wasn't expecting that, which didn't really suit that situation. But because people did generally know it, you could get away with it. Obviously, Ed plays solo. Ed's an incredible performer, completely solo, nobody else with him. He just builds and builds and builds those songs, which is what helps him create that sound to get across to all those people.
Yeah.
And he is a major talent in doing that, no doubt about it.
Well, you mentioned Crowded House and REM a moment ago. They're two very, very big bands for me. Have you ever seen the before they got back together, the last ever Crowded House show in Sydney.
Yeah.
I mean, I had that on VHS, and I mean, that's quite a gig, isn't it?
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Like, it's the Opera House, isn't it? And it's, yeah, like, as far as the eye can see, it's just literally the whole of Australia has turned up
gone to Sydney.
Watch.
Yeah.
Like, and, oh, it's unbelievable. And oh, I mean, are you a big fan?
I am, yeah. And I'm still a big fan of his. Yeah. He recently released a record called Out of Silence, which is just stunning.
Yeah.
It's so good. And you can watch the whole making of it on YouTube, because they filmed it.
Oh, really?
They did a weekly transmission where they showed you the rehearsals of how they were doing it, and then they recorded and live streamed the recording of it, which took 4 hours. So they made that album in 4 hours, and you can watch it all. They do two or three takes of each song, and it's just so beautiful. The song itself, wow, which the song Love is Emotional, which opens the record, is just a thing of absolute beauty and as good as anything else Crowded House ever did. It's so good.
Wow.
If you find a spare 4 hours, watch it.
Yeah, I've got a bit of time on my hands in lockdown.
Yeah, if you're into that sort of thing. I mean, if you're not a nerd about these things, you probably will get bored. But if you are, it's just like, wow. The concentration of it.
I can watch them all day long.
Yeah.
I had a really weird, just talking about Crowded House has just made me think of something really bizarre I'd completely forgotten about. That years and years and years ago, in the kind of mid-90s, there was a tiny little venue in Chelmsford called the Y Club near where I lived, and my band was playing, and it was like, yeah, you're supporting this band. They're doing this tiny tour. They're from New Zealand. And I was like, all right, okay. And they're called Dead Star, and I was like, oh, okay, and didn't know anything about them, and the press around them didn't mention it, and it was the bass player from Crowded House.
Oh, really,
and
Nick
Seymour?
I was like,
oh my god, like, and so literally just kind of was a little bit sort of dismissive, as like, I ain't even heard of them. I don't know who they are, but yeah, we're supporting this band, and then like, I was like, oh my god, I'd literally been watching that VHS on repeat, and I was like, it's him.
I used to work in a record shop in Dublin. It's been pretty much my only job ever that I had, and it lasted a year when I lived there. And Nick Seymour used to live in Dublin. And he would occasionally come in and buy records that I would then, you know, thanks, that'll be €30, thanks for, you know, that sort of thing, and not say anything. You know, it's just like, that's Nick Seymour. And it happened Peter Buck came in when REM played, and I sold Peter Buck records. And
are you serious?
Yeah, Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg came in one day. They had to shut the whole shop.
So would that have been when REM played in Dublin with Beautiful South supporting, I believe?
Oh, possibly, but I did not see them on that tour. I'd seen them at Slane Castle.
That was Monster, I think. Oh, right. Yeah, no, that was Monster.
That was Monster,
it?
Yeah, so I saw that, yeah, but I didn't see Beautiful South. When I saw them, it was Oasis opening with Belly and the Cranberries, I think.
I went to Milton Keynes for that, and that was Belly, because I was in love with Tanya Donnelly at that time. It was Belly, Blur, and another American kind of college rock band called Magnapop. And that was the first day that Blur, it was the first time Blur played Country House. They went, this is their new single.
Really?
And they played Country House.
Wow.
And, wow.
I do remember thinking when Oasis were there, and I hadn't really got them at that point, and I watched them, and I remember thinking, wow, Liam had something.
Yeah.
He had that thing, you know, and I've seen it a few times in other people, but it is very rare, and I can't work it out. I'm not a massive Oasis fan. I got into them at the time, you know, but I'm not a huge, huge fan. I think they've written some good songs, or Noel has written some good songs for sure. Yeah. But yeah, he definitely, I just remember I got to the mosh pit bit and had to get carried out. But so I got carried out over the front, and I remember just grabbing like 20 seconds to just look up and watch, you know, before I got moved on and turfed out. And it's like, you are, that's something.
So for the last track, I'm going to ask you, to tell us a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear. They can play DJ now, Jamie.
Okay, well, thanks. I've gone for a song called Tricks on Me by a guy called Jed Whedon. I think it's Jed Whedon and the Willing, I think, is the full band name. Now, I think Jed Whedon is the brother of Joss Whedon, who was the kind of writer or producer of all the Buffy series.
Okay.
And I think did all like some of the Marvel films and things like that. And I think Jed Whedon is in that world as well, but he must have this side band. And I think I discovered the track on a film, and I do not remember the title of the film because I don't think it was very good. But this song was in it, and I checked the song out, and I fell in love with the song and the album. And he's since released a couple more records, which are equally beautiful. And it's just a really gorgeous acoustic, really well-layered song, lovely melodies, really interesting lyrics, like the word allegory. I'm a sucker for any interesting word in a lyric. I don't know what allegory means, but it's in there, you know.
I hope you're not looking at me to tell you what it is, because I ain't got a clue.
So, yeah, it's a really beautiful, beautiful song. And I kind of I see it as a little bit as a kind of benchmark of good acoustic music and how it can be both really beautiful and really interesting at the same time, the way it's layered up. So there's another band called Wheat that I really love that I might have gone to as well. Not many people know the band Wheat, and they're very similar in just really interesting layers. You can spend hours finding something new all the time. And at the same time, really good lyrics, really interesting melodies, and, you know, things that will get stuck in your head.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that about music. I mean, and that's kind of what drew me to REM and Crowded House and even the Jackson 5 or the Smiths. You know, you've got these songs, this music where you can just sing along to it if you like. That's absolutely fine because those melodies are really strong and they'll stick in your head. Or this lyric, which you can really think about, really delve into, really discover something else and maybe find something about you in it.
Yeah.
And I love that about music. And that's kind of what I've been trying to do because of these sorts of songs.
Perfect. So new music is out now?
Yeah, today, this very day. Yeah.
Okay.
The Moving Images EP is out today.
Okay. And people can get that in all the usual places?
Well, yeah. I mean, as we are, I guess, you know, you're not walking into HMV. So
soon, apparently.
Is that
soon.
True? Okay.
15th, apparently.
Okay. Well, as things stand, you can, if you want a CD, you can get the, there's like a music glue site that I have that you can buy stuff. Or, you know, it's obviously on all the streaming services and things like that. So, yeah, feel free to have a listen. I'll be very grateful.
Well, I'll put together a Spotify playlist on Spotify of all your song choices today so people can go and check them out. And when this comes out, are you happy for me to sort of tag you in it on the social media front so people
can go
and...
Please do, yes.
Wonderful. Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure.
You too.
Thank you so much
thank
for your
you.
Time. It's been a blast.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Take care, man.
You too. Bye.
There you go. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed chatting to Jamie. It was a great podcast, that. What a smashing fella. And yeah, cracking taste in music. Even if he didn't share my love of New Edition. As mentioned on there, go and check out Jamie's new music, new EP out. And yeah. I think that's it. I think we're done. End of podcast. I'm back next week. If you can't wait that long, go over to Patreon and get involved there because there's loads, there's about 100 or so episodes up on there that haven't been released to the masses. And by going and checking that, you're also supporting this podcast. All I ask if you enjoyed this is press a little subscribe button and then each week, without any bother, a little episode will just pop up on your listening device and you can give it a whirl. Thanks again for listening, people. Thanks once more to Jamie. And yeah, I'll see you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.